Breaking down the top NBA draft prospects across the globe, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta and Alex Brown. And welcome back to another edition of the Prospect Podcast. It's almost that time. The NBA draft, the 2020 NBA draft is finally right around the corner, 2 days away to be exact. I believe 2 days from now, we're going to be right in the thick of things, if I'm right. But once again, I'm Ethan Piotta, joined today by Alex Brown. Been a very successful first year of Prospect Podcast that we've been putting out, our first season, if you will. And we're finally here. It's been a long road, Alex. I know we've struggled to even come up with stuff over these last few weeks and stuff, because it's just been, man.
Yeah.
It's been a constant thing of, well, yes, we can keep talking about Xavier Tillman and how much we love him. We can keep talking about Tyrell Terry and Malachi Flynn, but man, our evaluations haven't really changed.
Omer Yurtseven, Justinian Jessa, Mason Jones. Right. Yeah, we can go over them if you want, but
yeah. But again, 2 days away, and the NBA trade moratorium was actually lifted today at, I believe, 1 Eastern. And about an hour after that, we got Chris Paul heading to the Phoenix Suns. So OKC trades Chris Paul. OKC yesterday trades Dennis Schroeder for the 28th overall pick from the Los Angeles Lakers. So now let's talk about OKC. We're going to talk about a lot of teams and their potential draft strategies, potential moves that they can make, address some trade rumors, address some draft rumors, some risers and fallers, if you will. But let's start it off right away with OKC, Alex. Now with the 25th and 28th overall picks in the first round, and they just have a plethora of picks going forward. I believe, is it 17 in the next six years?
It's 17 or 16. Last I saw was 16, but it could be 17. I wasn't sure if that added on the Chris Paul trade pick, but or the Dennis Schroeder trade pick. But it's 16 or 17, which is insane.
Yeah, well,
absolutely insane.
I mean, regardless, yeah, that number is going to be something to watch for years to come. But 25 and 28 now. What does OKC, what's their plan going into this draft? Are they looking to trade up? Are they looking to use both of those picks? What kind of players are they looking to use those picks on? Let's talk about OKC.
Sure. Yeah. So I think it's rather obvious. They're clearly going young, moving CP3 away and Dennis Schroeder as well. You have such an incredible basket of assets, and I think getting two picks in the late first round is an interesting move for them, because with all these future draft picks you're going to get, that has to be part of the decision-making process in this draft. The question then is, are you going to get a couple guys that are going to set the culture, you know, establish themselves as impact players immediately, or are you going to swing for the fences on some young guys, or are you going to mix, you know, use a mix of that? So I think if you're the Thunder, you take your guy at 25, the best player on your board, and then you maybe take a risk at 28 with a guy that you feel has a lot of upside, but maybe not as much immediate impact. So if I'm at 25 and I'm them, I might be looking at, you know, Xavier Tillman, Malachi Flynn, maybe Tyrell Terry, any impact guard or a high intangibles big like Tillman. I could even see them taking a, you know, guy like Najee or Jalen Smith, but I think they have to take their guy at 25, then take that risk at 28 with a, you know, if they love Jay Scrub, or if they have a thing for Jaden McDaniels and he's still on the board somehow. I think that's the way you got to go, because you don't need surefire pieces considering their future assets, you know?
Right. And I mean, the assets that they have are almost too much to deal with in a way. Like they are going to have their fair share of draft picks over the next few years, their fair share of assets to deal. And so I totally agree. I think At 25, I'd love a guy like Tyrell Terry for them. I'd love Xavier Tillman, Malachi Flynn. All three of those names work. And I think the Thunder have proved that they have a good enough developmental team that they are able to take a risk on someone. Like maybe like I love McDaniels for them as well at 28. That maybe you throw in the G League for the first year because you don't really need him on your team. You don't really need to be making or drafting players that are going to have immediate impact, but rather can develop them, kind of put them through the ringer and stuff like that. And I think the Thunder have the liberty to do that because they've showed that they can develop guys over the last few years.
Yeah, and I also think it's going to be an interesting point for them regarding their competitiveness, because you obviously want to keep the winning culture that they've established while developing these guys. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they weigh, that culture decision this year, especially in this draft. And I think that's going to be evident based on the type of guys they pick up. You know, if they pick up like a Desmond Bain or a Tillman or a Malachi, I'm expecting them to keep, attempting to win, at least at some level. You know, they don't want to throw in the towel and tank for Cade as much as a lot of us would love to see that.
Right.
Because they're going to have enough assets where they can, stay competitive and continue to have solid draft picks. So exactly. I think there's a chance that they just take two, high impact players on good contracts in that late first round and maybe one flyer. But, if I were them, I would try and stay competitive just because I think there's teams that are going to out-tank them. And I don't want to Gilgeous Alexander or any of the other young guys on that roster in a losing environment. So
right.
I think that's going to be a really interesting balancing act to watch them play.
This was kind of something that a lot of people thought this year. Going into this year, a lot of people speculated that the Thunder were going to be at the bottom of the barrel in the West. They end up making a playoff push behind an excellent season from CP3. I personally think, obviously, the West is stacked. There's 9 or 10 really good teams in the Western Conference just on paper already. I don't think they have enough to make the playoffs again in the West, even though I do think Shai is going to have an excellent year. And they have interesting pieces now in Kelly Oubre and Steven Adams still on the team. They just traded for Danny Green in return for the Schroeder deal, Ricky Rubio. It's not enough to make the playoffs, unfortunately, but they're still going to be competitive. Here's another thing is that we kind of mentioned, why would teams trade to the top of this year's draft? And the Thunder is an interesting example. Because now, like we're talking about, they have 25 and 28. Is there any chance that the Thunder like someone enough in the mid-20s, or not even the mid-20s, the mid-teens, to package those two late-round picks and move up for maybe a slightly better player? Or are we expecting them to stay put? Is it smart for them to stay put?
So I think this just comes down to who they have higher on their board. If a guy falls to the mid-teens or whatever and they really like that guy and they can make a package deal for him, I think you obviously go for that. But if not, I mean, this draft class is so deep in the mid-late first round that I think you might get better value in some case just by keeping both those. In this scenario, at least, I don't see who they could move up for that would give them exponentially more value or enough value to really warrant giving up a player. But, we'll see, because I think it's definitely possible due to how many assets they have. They could say, hey, we have all these picks. There's no way we're going to make all these guys roster spots. So let's package it and, make a play for somebody. I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely in this class just because of the depth and value you will get at the end of the first round. So if I were Presti, I would stay put and pick up some high impact players that are going to be winners.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. And I think like we kind of mentioned, I would say 100% in terms of moving up in this year's draft, 2021 picks, probably even 2022 picks are completely off limits, at least for me. I would not be looking to move one of those, either of those picks in those years.
Yeah, they seem very, very, like very, very top. Well, maybe not top heavy. I can't really speak to that yet, but the top of those drafts are looking really, really nice. And 2021's, you know, again, this is a class that people are ecstatic about, extremely excited. We don't, you know, and we'll get more into that once the draft is over, of course. But yeah, it's unlikely that anyone's going to trade a 2021 pick, and rather unlikely anyone's going to trade a high 2022 pick. So yeah, I think the teams that have the leverage to move up in this class would be OKC, the Celtics, and maybe the 76ers as well.
Yeah.
But so I don't see a lot of other teams that have incentives to move to the top of the draft, or at least closer to the top.
And that's why we haven't seen much with the Warriors and whatnot, and everyone kind of, you know, speculated, oh, well, the Warriors are just going to trade this pick down. But like, there's not many suitors, unfortunately, is what we saw. And obviously, trades still could happen, but it is looking kind of quiet on that front. You mentioned Boston, though. Super interesting. We had a lengthy conversation about Boston before this because they have picks 14, 26, mm-hmm. and 30 in the first round. And there's a certain guy in the top 10 that I would say is absolutely perfect for them. And that's Onyeka Okongwu, who also addresses their biggest need, which is kind of just a versatile, defensive-minded big guy. Is there an option? I would say there definitely is an option for the Celtics to potentially move into the top 10, not necessarily knowing how high for Okongwu, but would it be worth it to package all three of those first round picks or 10 or, you know, 14 and one of 26 and 30 to move up for Okongwu, and then second rounder? Like, is that something that would be worth it for them? Does it address that big of a need?
Yeah, so that's a good point. The Celtics need to be asking themselves, okay, what needs do we need to address in this draft? And I think bench shooting and big defenders, versatile big defenders, are what they need to address with their picks. And so they can address that to a degree with their current picks. You know, you could get a versatile defensive big man and like Nick Richards in the second round, or you know, Xavier Tillman in the late first. Or you could get a drop flat hedge big like Jalen Smith or Zeke Nnaji, which, you know, they'll be successful players. They're two guys I like a lot. And then maybe some stash guys like Madar or, you know, Balmara with your other pick to, you know, because they're going to be overloaded on the roster if they keep everything in the U.S. at least. But, of course, you know, that other option, trade it for Okongwu in the top 10. I think the only teams that would really have an incentive to do that would be the Atlanta Hawks potentially and the Phoenix Suns now that they are making a move to compete. So I think you could package one of 26 and 30 along with 14. You know, that's a lottery pick and a late first, and that late first is valuable. And if they accept, you know, you get a top 10 pick and then your other late first and your second rounder. I think the Suns and the Hawks could potentially like that if they don't have their guy on the board. And let's say for instance that the Hawks love Isaac Okoro. You know, he's their guy. If he's not on the board and they think they can get better value at 14 and 26 or 14 and 30, I think that's the play you can make if you're Boston. But I think the Hawks are the best bet as far as landing Okongwu. If he falls to 10, I think you can also make an enticing package for him there with the Suns, because they can get a win now player with that late first rounder. Like they could get a Desmond Bane or a Xavier Tillman. Or Malachi Flynn, you know, and the list goes on. So yeah. It's really just, is he going to fall? And do the Hawks and the Suns think that, you know, 14 and 26, 14 and 30 would be an enticing enough package? And I think it could be. I think if there's a team that's going to move up in the lottery, it's going to be the Celtics. And if not, it's going to be, you know, taking a couple international guys and a couple win now guys, and one of those being a big. But I think if you're going to win now, you should make a move for Okongwu, because he's the type of versatile defensive big you need to, you know, play those versatile pick and roll coverages. And that's going to be the difference between if they trade and if they don't, because if you do and you end up landing Okongwu, you can really change your defense. You don't have to play drop or, you know, flat hedge, or, you know, these basic pick and roll coverages that a lot of playoff guards and wings and modern initiators can expose. So it's going to be a really fascinating move to watch. And it kind of reminds me, at least this position, of when the Bulls traded for Doug McDermott. And while the context is different as far as the outcome, there's history where, you know, teams will trade up for two mid-late round picks or mid-late firsts, and they'll give up their lottery pick. But the fact that they have a lottery pick to, you know, put in that package is also, you know, very enticing. So I think they're the only team, well, one of the only teams alongside the 76ers have a chance to move up. What are your thoughts?
No, they certainly have the ammo. And I think it seems a lot more likely that the Suns would be willing to do something like this instead of the Hawks. It still is a possibility for the Hawks, obviously, but it does seem like they like Okongwu enough at six. And there's a pretty good bet, I would say, that one of Okoro / Okongwu is there at six for the Hawks. But again, in return, like you said, it's not a bad package at all. You're getting in return 14 plus a late first rounder, which in this draft is more valuable than it normally would be, because of the kind of the equity of the first round, or at least the back end of the first round. And, you know, it works out for the Hawks or the Suns in that aspect. And also for the Celtics, if they're able to keep either 26 or 30, most likely 30, you then have a chance again to get kind of like what we addressed in terms of their needs, bench shooting. So you secure your big defender in Okongwu, who probably starts for you day one at number six or number 10 if he falls there. And then you're able to get a bench shooter like maybe a Tyrell Terry or a Grant Rillo or Desmond Bain or Malachi Flynn in the 30s or in the 26 range. Right, which is an ultimate win. I mean, they're arguably the winners of the draft if they come out with that hole. And I think Okongwu is obviously the biggest part of that.
Yeah, just going to say, it could be a good, you know, it could be a rare win-win situation if the, you know, the Hawks get their impact guy immediately at, you know, 26 or 30. And then, you know, they're only moving, maybe eight spots. And you know, again, it depends on what the board's going to look like, because they have less incentive to trade down and more bargaining power than the Suns do. So while it is, you know, it'd be easier to trade with the Suns, if you can get something to work with the Hawks and get a win-now guy like Okongwu, I think that'd be huge. And the pressure – I've heard there's pressure on the Hawks to start being competitive. They might look at that and say, hey, we could get an impact bench guy on a great contract, you know, for next couple of years. And just move a few spots down. And it's like, we don't need a core guy as much. You know, we have our future initiator. We have our, you know, our core of young wings so far. Like, we could always add another, of course, but in a class this deep, I think they have a legit argument for it. It could be a win-win deal there. I think that is that's probably one of the only spots that would really make sense for both teams to move around in the lottery.
Yeah, and I agree. I think the Hawks, if they are able to make the right moves in this offseason, have a legitimate chance to be a seventh or eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, and already have kind of a decent young core, I would say. I like their group of guys that they're building with in terms of Trae Young and John Collins and Herder and DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish. So I think it does make sense, you know, especially like we're saying, if their guy is not there at six, if it doesn't fall in their favor, if they don't like Okongwu as much as they're kind of giving out, it would make a lot of sense for them to trade back and gain some more ammo. Right. I agree with that. I think the other option for Boston is kind of like we talked about, using their then second rounder. And there's a lot of variance with these second rounders. We don't really know where guys are going to go. There's just the field seems almost wide open in terms of where guys are kind of being mocked towards. I know one of the guys you really like and you did a scouting report back on, but Nick Richards could be very well available for their second round pick. I know one of our favorites is Xavier Tillman, which, I mean, I remember us mocking Tillman back to the Celtics, or at least me, at 14 in kind of the mid-20s, way back when, which I think would be a huge win for them in the second round, or someone like two guys that I know we both like as well, Jalen Smith and Zeke Nagy, that can play kind of like that drop coverage role, but I'd still say would be a defensive upgrade over Kanter and some of the other guys that they currently have on the roster.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to play drop, you better get a guy like, I mean, Jalen Smith will still be able to be a good drop defender. It's just, you just don't want to have to run drop constantly unless you're elite at it. Cause it's just, it's not the best coverage to win with.
Not sustainable.
If you really, really want a winning pick and roll defense, you got to have versatile bigs. And I think,
Okongwu solves that problem.
Probably a better option for them. But if they do just say, but if they can't get him, Najee's probably QB2, at least for a five role. And he could play right away, which he wants. He's a smart guy. He'll fit in well. You know, kind of same to Jalen Smith. Both guys can stretch the floor much better than Tice. You know, I'm really buying Najee's shot and Jalen Smith's shot. You should absolutely buy. And they can both, you know, I mean, Jalen's more of a rim protector, but Najee has a little more mobility to him. So I think either one of those guys is an upgrade that can start very soon. I mean, again, the transition for them might take a little while because of the shortened offseason. But I think those guys are an upgrade. And so if you can get either of those guys at 26, you know, you could still mitigate your problem and upgrade that weakness. But if you could really turn the weakness into a strength like you could with Okongwu, you should make that move.
And but building for the future-wise, like it makes a lot of sense.
Of course, yeah. So I would love to see them make a move for him, but I also understand if they play it safe, go for a Jalen Smith or a Najee if they're on the board, but or Xavier Tillman if they just want to play small. But, that'll be a very interesting problem to solve this offseason for them because there aren't a lot of great bigs that are going to fit their system. In this draft, or not this draft, in the free agency period.
Obviously, we talked about potential draft pick trades, but potential trades around the NBA. I know Chris Paul was a big name, and he's now dealt to the Phoenix Suns. Dennis Schroeder kind of came out of left field, but there was some rumors about him. He's now with the Lakers. And now Russell Westbrook is...
They sold high on him, honestly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Russell Westbrook is now probably the biggest name, I would say. Other than James Harden, this is probably the second biggest name then on the trade front or in front of trade rumors. The Charlotte Hornets really like Westbrook. They want him, but they don't want to give up the third overall pick for him. Michael Jordan wants Russell Westbrook, but he doesn't want to give up the third overall pick. Why does this not make any sense? Like it just doesn't make sense for the Hornets at all. I just don't understand it.
It really doesn't.
In any aspect. Like, I feel like there's just so many things wrong with it. Like, first of all, you should not be mortgaging your future for Russell Westbrook. You should not be mortgaging your future to be a seventh or an eighth seed and instantly get balanced in the playoffs just because you want to be semi-relevant for one season. let's talk about actually building something, you know, within your team's future, within your team's core, and improve moving forward. Because I actually like the Hornets and what they've done over the last few years. I think they've at least started to take steps in the right direction towards building a decent young core by developing guys like Devontae Graham and PJ Washington. and Miles Bridges as well. I think they have a couple of young guys moving forward that could at least form some sort of a core. So why would you mortgage it all and potentially have to trade three and one of PJ and Miles to get Russell Westbrook? Like, why would you do this?
Yeah, I don't think they should do this at all. I think it would be, unless there's like severe ownership pressure and it's like, you know, your job is on the line, which I still would probably walk out if that were the case, because I wouldn't want to do something bad just to, you know, be decent for a season and then have it all blow up in your face later. But I don't get a push towards mediocrity, you know, and Westbrook would put up numbers, you know how he is when he's running the show, but they're not going to win playoff games. Not with him. It's just not how it works. It's not how his career's work. It's not how he was in his prime. It's not how he's going to be now. So if they buy high on him and give up one of those assets, I think that's a really disappointing move, and definitely one that's going to set them back even further. Because when you have such a ball-dominant initiator, that's going to stifle the development of some of your other guys. And it would point to them not picking up an initiator maybe in this draft. I mean, why would
you? Yeah, it does.
Maybe if you were going to trade for Russell, why would you pick a guy like LaMelo? Or, you know, I know Killian Hayes apparently has not been mocked this high, but Killian Hayes too. It's like, would you really want to take the ball out of a young initiator's hands to put it in Russell's so that you can push for maybe a ninth or, you know, a ninth or an eighth spot? That just doesn't,
that doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Especially if they
have
to give up an asset.
For Westbrook, is like, yeah, like there's then, it almost feels like LaMelo's off the board for them, or wouldn't make sense for them at three, because then
development, definitely.
Right, absolutely. And so, like, then you're almost fully committing to Wiseman, but then if Wiseman's off the board at two, then you're kind of stuck. Then, like, it's like almost, what are you doing? But I think if they want to make this deal happen, they're for sure going to have to give up number three. So there's a lot of things wrong with it, and there's just not much right with it. You're then, you know, you're also trading for Westbrook. You're also losing just like at least a maximum a third of your cap space. They already have issues with paying Nick Batum another year of his massive player option that they paid him. I think Biombo, is he still on contract with them as well? Mm-hmm. And Zeller and a few of these other guys that have,
I believe so, and Terry
massive contracts. Terry Rozier as well. So it's like you're then bottling up yourself financially as well, when you could take a guy on a rookie contract and develop him, and it'd probably be better for your future as well. And like, where are you moving? Like, in terms of having Westbrook, you're not getting into the top six of the East next year, just on paper at least, with the Nets, the Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics, the 76ers probably, and the Heat. You're not getting cracking that top six. So like, it's almost like, what are we doing here? We're moving from the 10th to the 7th seed, and then we're mortgaging our future as well?
Yeah, you know, and if they don't give up three, they're going to have to give up, you know, more young assets, you know, and I'm sure some cap relief, but it just – I don't see a way this makes sense. I mean – it would be a very poor move that I would advise against. I would tell them to stick with the plan. Even if you don't find your initiator of the future at three, keep finding guys that are going to be really solid players. You know, build quality all around. And if you can't find it, don't waste it on, you know, a highly productive ball dominant guy that's past his prime. I don't see how that's a logical move at all. I think
he's coming off arguably the worst stretch of games in his career.
I think Sam Presti's a genius for even offloading him and turning him into, you know, as many draft picks as he did.
Yeah.
But it would be a travesty for the Hornets if they picked up Russell Westbrook. An absolute travesty, and I would heavily advise against it.
I never know with the 76ers. I always feel like I have a plan going into the draft. And this year, it seems like almost one where you can't mess it up. When you, again, you mentioned 21, 34, 36, 49, 58, certainly probably going to end up selling one of those second round picks or you know, trading it away. So it's like, again, like you mentioned, why wouldn't you package 49-21 to move up a few spots or something like that if you're able to get a team to bite. At 21, I think realistically there's so many guys that I'd be perfectly fine with, and that's rare. Especially, you know, when you're drafting in the late first round. But Isaiah Joe, Tyrell Terry, Malachi Flynn, Tyrese Maxey, if he was able to somehow fall this way. Yes. We've seen a lot of variance on him. The 76ers, their main needs, again, are shot creators. They need playmakers, and they need two-way threats. They need guys that are going to be able to put the ball on the floor, create alongside Ben Simmons, knock down open shots. Still in need of a backup big man as well, which would probably be addressed with a second-round pick. But if you're the 76ers, you're using your first three picks on the best space creators, playmakers possible. I think either one of Isaiah Joe, Tyrell Terry, Malachi Flynn, or Tyrese Maxey fit that need perfectly. And I think they're all very plausible as well at 21. Isaiah Joe, you're talking about a great shooter that you can stick alongside Ben Simmons, something that he really missed last year with the departure of J.J. Redick and Landry Shamet the year before. Tyrell Terry also, I believe, fits that mold. Malachi Flynn maybe even more so in that off-guard role, but also offers a lot more creation.
I would love his fit there.
Exactly. Yeah, he's probably my favorite. And then Tyrese Maxey, kind of, I would even say, just a notch above Flynn in terms of creation, but also brings another layer of defense, especially at the point of attack, that would be excellent for the 76ers' backcourt. He would be a great fit alongside Ben Simmons, especially if he continues to develop as a shooter. And then you're looking at 34, 36, 49, and 50. I think those are all important for finding, again, just role guys and linking pieces. So you're talking about Desmond Bane would be a dream, I believe, at 34. Robert Woodard is another guy I'd really like to see. Grant Riller, who's been one of my favorites, would also make a lot of sense. And then I like Jan Madar being stashed with one of the 49 or 58 picks. I think Madar makes a lot of sense, especially when you have five picks in an NBA draft. Using one of them on a stash makes a lot of sense, because then you're not taking five guys on a contract into the next season. I think Madar is probably the best stash option in this draft, at least for me.
And if you wanted to make that, you know, four picks, again, trading up and packaging a second rounder might be the move. But yeah, I totally agree. I would love to see guys like Flynn, Maxey, you know, Terry or Joe, any of those guys. I would love to see them. What do you think about Cole Anthony to the 76ers?
So I'm glad we're talking about Anthony here, because he's right on our next topic of kind of how far could Cole Anthony fall, because he's definitely, I would say, been a faller since the pre-draft process, since the draft process really started, especially just dating back all the way to last year when he was top three consensus on most big boards. I am not a Cole Anthony guy. I know you're not either. I know we're a bit lower on him. And kind of for, honestly, the same reasons. I do think, however, that the 76ers are one of the better destinations for Cole Anthony if he was able to fall to 21 in this draft. He's also someone that I would say is one of the only guys I'd be really comfortable with the 76ers saying, okay, let's package 34, 21, let's go get 16, and let's draft Cole Anthony because he's falling, and that's our guy. And we trust in our locker room. We trust that. Hopefully Joel Embiid's still here, you know, come season time. Obviously, there's a lot of trade rumors going around right now with James Harden. But I think Cole Anthony is a guy
that
we've mentioned needs to be checked. He's going to need to be checked on that first day of practice. He's going to need to be put in his place. And I think Joel Embiid is the perfect leader, the perfect guy for that. You mentioned the whole Mo Bamba thing earlier when Embiid was – welcoming Mo Bamba to the league, if you will. And I think it was a summer. It was literally like a summer or spring workout too, before the season even started. And Embiid was just destroying rookie Mo Bamba in the gym. I believe they were the same training agency. But I think Cole Anthony, again, he's someone that offers super creation upside on the 76ers. He's, I would say, has the potential to be a plus defender at the point of attack at the next level. And he's someone that can also pass as a playmaker alongside Ben Simmons, and you want him to continue to develop off the ball. If he's able to iron out some of his character issues, which is, again, the intel that we've heard on Anthony is just, it's not good. That's kind of what arguably holds me back as him as a teammate, him off the court. I think a lot of those issues get ironed out if he is immersed into a good locker room culture. And I would say getting immersed into a locker room with Embiid, Simmons, and some of the other veterans that will be there, and now Doc Rivers as well, it makes a lot of sense. And I think it might be something that could potentially maximize his upside.
Well said. I'm totally with you. I think there's two spots that I would see him really succeed in, and that is 76ers and potentially the Heat. Because as you mentioned, Intel, it's just bad. You know, he's not really somebody you would be dying to play with. Just keep it light. You know, he needs to go to a team with an alpha. You know, a Jimmy Butler or a Joel Embiid. Somebody that's going to, you know, say, hey, you know, I'm the boss here. This is going to be my team. You know, you're not going to be talking down to my guys. You're not going to be hurting morale. You got to know your role and you got to fall in line. And that's either going to make him a better person and a better player, or it's going to make him rebel. So it's going to be fascinating watching Anthony play out as far as, you know, the situation he was thrust into. And I think with the success of guys like Tyler Herro at the Heat, I'd be comfortable taking him at 22 if I were them, just because, you know, they've shown that they can handle that type of, I mean, in Harrow's case, it'd be arrogance and, you know, just overall cockiness. He was a guy that enjoyed talking smack to coaches and just, you know, he had some locker room issues and such, but right. Anthony's a little different. And I think those are the real two destinations that would actually work for him. But, you know, I hope it works out and his character matures a little bit, because it is kind of worrying. It's genuinely worrying to me.
Yeah.
As far as a guy that you'd want to be a leader at a point guard spot, you know. So I think a team really has to know their locker room.
It's definitely a risk that could pay off, though. It's definitely a risk that could pay off. Like if he ends up succeeding and buying into that culture of, say, Miami or Philadelphia, he then adds another layer to either one of those teams. You know, and this is saying if he continues to develop as a prospect as well, if he lives up to his potential, because he does have a great amount of potential. He's a super athlete. There are some injury concerns, but I mean, he's a very good basketball player. That goes without saying. He's a tough player. He's a very good defender. I enjoy watching him play on a court. And obviously he didn't get,
I love him on the rep. Court.
He didn't get a great rep last year at North Carolina, playing with the team that he had, the limited spacing. It was the worst North Carolina team in years. He was driving into sometimes five guys in the paint. So there is that benefit of the doubt with Cole Anthony. And it's a risk that, like you said, if he rebels, you probably end up wasting a first-round pick, maybe even on him. But if it works, it could be a great reward for your franchise. He could turn into a great complementary piece on either one of those contending teams, which is why I worry so much about him going top 10. Is because, like, I just can't buy into the fact that he's going to then, you know, immediately become the leader of, say, a team like the New York Knicks at 8. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think the best way that he can succeed, right? The best way that Cole Anthony can succeed is to buy into a culture and to kind of learn from the other guys around him. And I think that really maximizes his upside and everyone's happy, because then we get to see him truly as a good basketball player at the NBA level.
Exactly, which is what we want to see, because I loved watching Cole Anthony in high school. I thought he was awesome. He was my, you know, in my preseason top three. And, you know, that was, again, before I did a lot of intel work on him and, you know, heard more stuff from other folks. And, you know, that's just the way it works. But if he goes to a culture with an alpha that can really keep him humble and, you know, in his place, making moves to help the team. I would love to see what he could become as a basketball player, but until we see that development, I'm just, you know, tentative there. But would love to see him in Philly. Would love to see him in Miami. I think those are two situations where he could really thrive, but not somewhere like Minnesota. Or, you got to have a real mentally tough locker room.
Justinian Jessup, because he's been someone that was, I would say, I dare say, completely off draft boards a few months ago, not even on the radar of some teams. And now we're seeing him inside ESPN's top 60. We're seeing him on various draft boards in the top 50.
Yeah.
And he's starting to gain a lot of rapport, if you will, around the league. So what about Justinian Jessup? Because his case, I know we've been advocating for him for a while as a shooter that can instantly be an impactful guy down the road
drive
in his career.
Jessup hype train, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely. So talk about Jessup. What's his rise been like? Where is he at on most boards? Does he have a realistic shot at now being drafted? And I think him being drafted is absolutely warranted as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, I really started noticing when I saw him in the ESPN, like, I think top 60 on best available. He, like, cracked that list, made it to 60, which I was, like, I was so hyped for him because, you know, I've been pulling for this guy for quite a while. Love his game. And, you know, I'm sure if you're a regular listener of us, you know how much I like Jessup's game. He's a top 40 guy on my board. But, I spoke with some sources close to him, and the rise in the interest from NBA teams is very real. It is definitely there. I think he does have a chance to get drafted in the late second. He's currently mocked at, I believe, 59 to the Raptors on my mock. But, yeah, the interest is there. And I've seen him rise around draft Twitter quite a lot in the last month or so. I've, you know, typically didn't see him past 70 or up above 70. Now I'm seeing him in guys 40s and 50s and top 60. And I just love to see that. So it seems guys are really buying into what Jessup has to offer, both on the draft Twitter level and at the NBA level. And of course, you know, he has that pre-stash option with the Hawks in the NBL. But I think there's a chance he gets drafted in the late second round. I mean, he's a specialist shooter, super smart, plays tough defense, real blue-collar mentality. I mean, he's a guy I'd want on my team. And I think that this notable rise as of late is a perfect timing for him. And I think there's a real chance he gets picked in the late second.
Yeah, it's great to hear him because I think like we've mentioned it, he's someone that when he's on as he often is from three, he's an absolutely elite shooter from behind the arc. He's going to make a positive impact on some team. And I think just with that elite skill alone, and I believe he can only grow in his surrounding areas as well. He's got great positional size. I know it's something you've harped on. And I again, just would make a really decent impact, especially on a team like a contender. If you see him on a Milwaukee or a Philadelphia or someone like that that needs shooters around their Helios.
Denver, wink, wink.
Right. Denver, I mean, that'd be something to definitely watch for. And I think Jessup, that's how he's kind of carved his rollout to teams so far in the pre-draft process. So hoping to see him get his name called come draft night. And we're going to cap this episode off right about in an hour, actually. We've been pretty good on time with a few questions that we got from our listeners. First one from Clayton Conover. Thanks for the question, Clayton. Just asked Denver's likelihood to trade up in the draft. And I believe Denver has the 23rd pick in the first round? 22nd pick in the first round. So for Denver, I mean, I know there's been rumors about Poku being potentially linked to Denver over the last few days. Is that probably someone that they might have to move up for in the first round, would you say? and what's their likelihood to move up? Because I think I'd honestly say with their roster construction and the guys that would be in that area, I feel like Denver would be a team that I would bank on mostly staying put.
Yeah, I think there's a real chance they'd have to move up for Poku based on what we're hearing. And I think they stay put and get a wing shooter at 22. The guy, I mean, I have them taking Desmond Bane currently. And some might see that as a reach in NBA circles. I certainly think it's a steal. A guy that can impact the game right away. Is just an absolutely lethal shooter. And, you know, provide a winning impact immediately. And there's very few of those guys come around often. So I think they could also go for a guy like Josh Green, you know, get some more wing defense or shooting. You know, I think Isaiah Joe even you consider just adding to that shooting package. I don't think you really need to trade up to find value. I may even, you know, if I got offered something nice from Philly or not Philly, maybe like Boston, like 26 in their second rounder or, you know, something more enticing potentially. I would even consider that just to add another, you know, potential role players or take flyers. But I would almost 100% bet on them staying at 22.
Yeah.
I think them and would make any moves.
Yeah. I'm right there with you on that. And obviously moving up for Poku is, I mean, it would be horrifying, at least just watching Jokic, Bol Bol, and Poku all sprint together on the NBA basketball court. Maybe even all at the same time. Maybe even all at the same time, which would be, I think.
And then they get Chet Holmgren in a couple of years.
Right. Then they get Chet Holmgren, and then they get – maybe somehow they land Cade Cunningham or they trade for Ben Simmons, and it's just the ultimate, like, demigod lineup.
I just want to play 5-7 footers on the floor.
I just want to see it once, right? But I think definitely would be having to move up into that lottery based on at least kind of like what we're hearing for Poku. I'm with you though. I 100% think that's a team that's staying where they are. Next question that we got though is how do you think the CP3 trade changes the Suns draft board? And we kind of talked about this. I'm glad we got this question because I texted you this morning that my favorite prospect for the Suns now that they've addressed their need at point guard in CP3, and there's still a lot of ways that they can go here, but I think the Suns should absolutely be looking to draft a wing with their 10th pick or to be moving down, kind of like what we mentioned. And that wing slash stretch four slashing four that would be at the top of my target list is Patrick Williams from Florida State. I think he adds to their defensive versatility that they have now in that lineup and could potentially start from day one on that team, could contend with Cam Johnson for that starting spot. He's only going to keep developing as a shooter. He's going to bring you strong interior defense, perimeter defense. And I think Patrick Williams is a guy that – would be a really interesting fit on that wing alongside Mykal Bridges. And that is saying if guys like Isaac Okoro and Devin Vassell and Danny Avdia, who are, you know, projected to be off the board by that point, are off the board. But I'm full go on Patrick Williams to Phoenix at 10. I think he's probably their best option with their need of kind of like more threes and fours at that area.
Yeah, I think they go best player available. Honestly, I think the idea before this was they don't have their their one. You know, they're having Devin Booker play the one a little bit, but he can play off the ball so well too. So I think this just kind of pushes them even more to BPA. I think they could go Tyrese Haliburton as a kind of a different option. Talk about a guy that could really benefit from learning the game behind Chris Paul. I mean, what two cerebral guys working together with, you know, a guy that's eager to learn. I would love that. And I also think if, you know, there's a wing on the board that they like potentially Vassell, or if he's still around, or I think Pat Will is going to be more of a 4-5. Like, I'd like him as a small ball five, but I know we differ on that opinion, but
right.
He could also be a very nice fit as a versatile you know, play that four spot as well. I don't think he's going to take Cam Johnson's spot initially, but he could be a impactful role player on that team. But yeah, I'd be happy with, you know, Bay, you know, Halliburton or Patrick Williams. I'd be cool with any of those guys they deem as BPA.
Yeah, no, they're definitely in a great spot now, and obviously I'm on the Pat Will train. Obviously, yes, we do differ a little bit on his defensive versatility. I think he's going to continue to grow and be a really impactful wing defender. But also, like you're saying as well, I think it's very valuable that he has the ability to probably play a lot of small ball five, which would be interesting with Ayton off the court if he could fill that kind of role for the Suns. But moving on from Pat Will,
I think, being a more versatile defender there.
Yeah, I think Halliburton's still a great option as a linking piece off the bench, potentially kind of learning a little bit under Chris Paul even. And then I still think Kyra Lewis would be an excellent six-man.
Makes plenty of plays.
Yeah, right, and one of the smartest players in this draft. And I think Kyra Lewis would be an excellent six-man potentially. Six-man volume scorer, volume playmaker, can come in and you'd be running pick and rolls 48 minutes of the game with the guard rotation of him, Booker, and Chris Paul. He'd still be someone that I'd keep an eye on if I'm the Phoenix Suns. But it changes a lot more in terms of just how their draft board changes from now, you know, now you need to draft a point guard to now, okay, now we have the ability to, like you're saying, take best player available.
Yeah. We have more incentive to go BPA, but I like the Kyra idea as well, because talk about a guy that could, again, benefit from learning from Chris Paul. That's a guy that has that advantage creation of, you know, his burst and all that. But learning some more mental ways to create advantages would be huge as well. So, big fan of that. I think either of those would be really great options.
Yep. But going to be super interesting to see what the Suns do come draft time, as well as all these other teams. I know we said hopefully we have an excuse to put out some kind of emergency podcast so that we can talk about some kind of change that happens. Either tomorrow or before the draft. But this could very well be our last.
Bulls promise. Right,
something,
Hayes.
something. This could very well be our last draft podcast before the 2020 NBA draft. And then we're going to finally be able to move on to brighter and bigger things.
No, that's crazy.
I certainly enjoyed this class and all the support that we got along the way. Definitely the first class that we're going to be building with, hopefully, for many to come. So always going to be special to me, even though it was definitely a grind talking about some of these guys for as long as we did.
It was a strange one, yeah.
But that's all we got for today.
It's been a long, long year.
Again, follow us on Twitter. Follow Alex at AHB Analytics. He's been pumping out great scouting reports. I'm sure I'll have some excellent stuff around the draft time as well for you to follow along with. Follow me on Twitter at Ethan Piotta. Follow the Prospect Podcast at Prospect Pod. Like us, subscribe to us, leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts if you enjoyed. Again, can't say enough about all the support that we've gotten this year. Even though we're still on the smaller side, I feel like we've made so much progress throughout this year, and we're, you know, only hoping to get better and keep going from this point on. So again, appreciate you guys. NBA draft ends the way that you guys all hope for your individual teams, and that we were able to kind of help on the way through. But with that being said, we'll see you on the next episode.